Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Grant Napier Show.
This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
This team, there he is again. My goodness.
Doug Christie, what a pass. Men against boys.
The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
Crouches, gets a step to the baseline. Drive. Oh, with the right hand. Oh, boy.
Now, Grant Napier.
And we broadcast live from Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. It's the first of six preseason games for the Kings. Tonight, the Lakers in L.A. Thursday, the Warriors in Seattle on Friday. But we are going to talk NFL football. And once again, for the fourth week of this young season, maybe the worst officiated Sunday that I have seen this year in the NFL. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. And yesterday was an embarrassment. We got the Raiders. They were the beneficiary of two dreadful, dreadful calls to beat Cleveland in a very unimpressive performance. I thought the Niners played about as well as they can under the circumstances. They fall up just short, and the rest of the NFL, Doug. But, hey, it is what it is. But some of the calls yesterday, boy, were they bad.
Well, you know, for a couple of years now, Grant, we've been trying to figure out what is the catch. And now all of a sudden we're looking at the referees. And from my understanding, they've been told to call certain things. But when it comes to the ability to go back and watch instant replay and still not come up with the right call, that makes it tough for a fan to watch.
A couple of bad injuries yesterday. Tyler Eifert of the Bengals, Earl Thomas of the Seahawks, and, of course, all the talk about Earl Thomas is the way he exited the field. And I don't know if you can leave the field with less class than Earl Thomas did.
Oh, Grant, this one hurts, man. Watching it, listen, that's Earl Thomas. He is a rough rider, and you would hope that that wasn't directed to exactly who everyone thinks, and I'm pretty sure it was directed towards is the Seahawks. That goes to show for a lot of people why you ask why do players hold out and stuff. That's exactly why. Now, I understand some people say, oh, well, but this is their only way to deal with it, and unfortunately, Earl Thomas is now hurt, injured, and didn't the contract that he was looking for.
I don't have a problem if they hold out, but here's the deal, all right? You signed a four-year contract for $40 million. In the language in the contract, it does not say after your third year that you can violate your contract by not coming to work. If you don't want to sign your contract for $40 million 4 years ago, knowing full well that at the end of your third year, going into your fourth year, you may not get an extension, then don't sign it. If you don't like the rules of the NFL, then go to your fellow players in the NFL as a union and tell the owners that you're not playing until they change the system. But I'm so tired of this nonsense, you know, of the way he exited the field. I'm sorry, that's inexcusable. Now, I know it's a game of emotions, and I can understand what may be going through his mind during that point. But to give the finger to your team over there, it doesn't get any lower than that.
No, it was a bad scene, and it's unfortunate because, you know what, a lot of times some of those guys, and Earl Thomas I will put into that mold, Grant, that are those special type of defensive players. He may have come back as the defensive coordinator or something like that, or the ability to train players on the defensive side of the football.
That's a good
point. The chances of that now happening probably aren't good.
I don't like the way he handled himself as far as it went last season with the Cowboys and, you know, basically saying, hey, I want to go play there when he's still – you know what? It's just a bad look. He's a heck of a player.
Yes, he is.
They're first and foremost great, great, great football player. And I hate seeing anybody get hurt. I'm not rooting for him to get hurt. But, I mean – you know, I'm really perplexed by what's going on in the NFL right now in this sense. We know that the players want guaranteed contracts.
Right.
I understand that.
Yes.
That's why you have collective bargaining, okay? That's why you have an opportunity when you do your deals to sit down and go over them. Once you as a player, and you've gone through this.
Yes.
Once you as a player ratify the deal.
It's done.
Which basically means you're okay with the deal
and
you're ready to go to work. Well, don't try to change the deal in the middle of the deal. You as a player ratified the deal, live up to the deal.
And that's where the NFL, I think, is when you said this, it must have been a month or so ago, Grant, that the NFL is probably going to go through a lockout. There probably will be something like that. If the NFL players want to make a change, it's not going to be by guys holding out. Now, I will say this. With what happened to Earl Thomas and you see what Le'Veon Bell is doing, this is going to light a fire under a lot of players to do something similar and make sure. Because this is an example of the worst-case scenario. But going into the next collective bargaining agreement, things will get ugly, I think.
All right, I guess you had two things happen in Chicago. You had a quarterback really look like a franchise-caliber quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky.
Yep.
And then you had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that is the team we thought they were going to be. They got manhandled in Chicago, didn't they?
Man, and it starts with this guy. I think you heard of him. His name is Khalil Mack.
Oh, boy.
And, man, another –
not good enough to play for the Raiders, by the way.
Another strip. I mean – it starts with the defense, but this is the question, Grant. Who are the Chicago Bears? Are they the team that just absolutely dominates, or, and that's on the defensive end, or are they the team that dominates on the defense, and if they get anything from Mitchell Trubisky, they turn into something special?
If they do, they're going to win the division.
I would say so. And you pair that with what we saw with Tampa Bay, and I think you're right. I think that's more of the team that, you know, everyone thought that they might have started out the season. This is the opportunity for Jameis Winston to lead this team now at 2-1 or whatever they are. If he does a good job, I think he keeps his job. If he doesn't, they're probably drafting in the first round looking for a new quarterback.
All right. We take your phone calls at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Two baseball games today to decide divisional winners. One was the Brewers beating the Cubs, so they win the NL Central. Right now, the Dodgers are up 4-0 on Colorado. If that score holds, the Dodgers will win the NL West. That would mean Colorado would be at Chicago tomorrow, and the winner of that game would advance on. The loser's season would be over. We are going to talk about the A's a little bit on the show today with Ray Fosse coming up at 6 o'clock as the Yankees host the A's on Wednesday. Coming up at 3:45, we'll talk with Russell Baxter, NFL writer for the NFL Spin Zone. John Feinstein, Ryder Cup talk. We haven't gotten into that, but that was an embarrassing performance by the United States. Just embarrassing. There's just no other way to say it. You're up 3-1 in the morning session on Friday, and from that point forward, it was embarrassing. It was hard to watch. It was hard to watch.
You know, Grant, just looking at it, it means way more to the Europeans.
The passion that the European players show.
And that's the word. That is the word, is passion. And if you're not going to have that same passion, that's one of the intangibles that goes into competing. That's that special thing that'll take a team that may be kind of the same and sends them over the top. And you look at some of those guys and the way that they responded. I mean, they were all in.
You got Dustin Johnson, Ian Poulter. All right, now, if you didn't know who was who and you were just watching.
Yeah, Ian Poulter's the number one player in the world.
Yeah, you're going, boy, that guy, you know, you know, and then, you know, and again, Dustin looks like a lump on a log, you know. And again, that doesn't mean he can't play golf. But I think in this event, there's got to be some emotion out there. And I didn't see that at all. The European players, give them credit, they dominated. And you know, you look at a guy like Francesco Molinari, what a year he had. He breaks through and wins the Open Championship.
Yeah.
And he absolutely dominated. You had Tiger, who was awful. You had Phil, who was awful. I mean, I can go right on down the list. There were a lot of bad performances by the United States.
And I thought Jordan Spieth makes up for it on the last day, but before that, man, he did not play good. So it's not just Tiger and Phil, you know, they're older, whatever. This was a, you know, and a lot of people may point at Jim Furyk and coaching or managing captainism or whatever you want to call
it. I don't think it would have mattered.
Look, you got to come and you, and this goes back to Phil complaining about, I think it was Tom Watson at one
point. Yes, it was. Watson.
And that's right. That's not what you see from Europe.
No, I mean, you had it yesterday, Patrick Reed, you know, and Jordan Spieth and the divide between them. And Patrick Reed said he was blindsided. And, you know, know what, really? You're playing for the United States of America.
Yes.
Shut up and play.
That's where, Grant, you got to get yourself out of the way. You're playing for something. Yep. That's what happens. See, golf is an individual sport. And that's why, in my opinion, I don't think Tiger plays really good when he plays with someone, because he was never trained to play with anyone. It's just him, and it's all about him. Well, when you play a team sport, and that's, make no mistake, that's what Ryder Cup is. It's team. That means you got to sacrifice a little bit of yourself for the bigger picture, and that's the whole of the team. And the U.S. does not do that, in my opinion.
Now, Tiger has not had a good run in the Ryder Cup. You might be onto something there.
Well, the singles, he's played okay, except for this time. I mean, he has a winning record in singles, but in doubles, he's miserable, man.
Horrible.
I mean, now, could it be, and whatever, a golfer is a golfer, but the you're hitting your ball, then you're hitting their ball, and then you're hitting your ball. I mean, it's a different actual different ball. He plays a Bridgestone. Maybe he's hitting a Titleist. In my opinion, you know, it's the Indian, not the Arrow, Grant.
All right. So the Ryder Cup is in the books, and if you want to talk about that, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. But it was just an absolute manhandling by Europe over the United States. And, you know, so see, I look at a guy like Sergio Garcia.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Right?
Every time.
That's right. Every time. And the passion and the fire, and you can see the love, the absolute love and passion that he has playing for Europe in the Ryder Cup. Like that's his life, it looks like, you know, and I don't see that on our team.
And it's really unfortunate because you'll look at it and say, okay, well, the Americans are stacked. But when you go up against a team that's playing like a team, and where I'm lacking, you're giving me support, and you're all in, and you're cheering for me, and I see that a guy who normally wouldn't cheer for you is now cheering for you. That gives you a little something.
Because the majority of the fans over there are rooting for Europe. We get that. So you're a road team for lack of – so you only have yourselves.
So
get together and get it going.
Exactly. Right? So that means that we need to cheer for each other, and really – I mean – they're going to drown us out, but that's not the point. The point is we build something special for each other. And, you know, whatever you want to say, playing on the road, those are the best golfers in the world, man.
All right. So, again, if you want to talk about that, we'll do so. We've got a lot going on the show today, NFL. We got the baseball playoffs and, oh, yeah, the Sacramento Kings tonight. All right, so here we are with six preseason games.
Yes, sir.
Three this week, three the following week. What are some of the things that you would like to see tonight from the Kings?
You know, I want, first and foremost, I want to see them play just kind of what we were just talking about with Ryder Cup, an emotionally charged game, meaning not over the top where you're out of control, but the passion needs to jump out
all
at
right,
you.
How hard is that to do in preseason? Take me through it as a player.
It's definitely hard, but even like the good teams, even when they're out there for a second, because many times you'll see guys like, and this is LeBron, it's like his 17th year or whatever it is, but even when he was younger, you only play for 10 minutes, you play for 12 minutes, but those 10 or 12 minutes – they're the right 10 or 12 minutes. And if you got to manufacture it, whatever you have to do, we need to see that the starters can compete at a high level.
All right. Again, correct me if I'm wrong here. And again, I'm speaking to you from your player's perspective.
Yes.
I would think that tonight, right now, assuming they're not napping, that the butterflies would be huge right now for Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley.
Yes, both of them. And I think Harry is chomping at the bit because he's been around this for so long now. He's been around for a year. He knew he wasn't going to play. Now he is excited just to get on the court. So, yeah, it's going to take probably the tip off them getting up and down a couple times, maybe getting hit before they get that feeling. Bagley, a guy who fast-forwarded through high school to get to college so that he could get to this point, is now here. So for both of those guys, you kind of have to calm yourself down and relax and almost feel like you're going in slow motion. And when you look at the tape, you'll still be moving fast.
This also is an opponent that's vastly different than last year. And so we talk about DeAndre Ayton. We talk about getting a Trevor Ariza.
Yep.
You know, we talk about Devin Booker, who's hurt, so we obviously aren't going to see him for a couple of weeks. They made a big trade to give Marquise Chris in that deal. So he's no longer here as he was getting ready to start his third year. This is an interesting team, the Phoenix Suns. We saw Josh Jackson in Summer League, and we thought we saw the improvement.
Yes,
you know,
we did.
And so, you know, to me, both these teams have some intrigue for this game.
You know, they do. And when you look at the Kings' size, they have a lot of size in Bagley and Willie Cauley-Stein, and you can go Scal and on, a lot of size. When you look over at the Suns, Trevor Ariza, 6'8", you got Devin Booker, who isn't playing, Mikal Bridges. You got a lot of guys in that 6'8 to 6'6 range. They can do a lot of different things. So the way that they play is they're going to get up and down the floor, I think, and they're going to look to score the basketball as much as possible. They got a guy like T.J. Warren, 6'8". He can put the ball in the basket as well. So this is a chance for some of these guys on this Suns roster to step up while Devin Booker is out.
All right, Dodgers have gone up 5-0. Too bad nobody seems to care. Did you see the hell empty that stadium was at the, for the game?
Man, they panned around.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
I can't blame it on the late-arriving crowd because of rush hour. The game started at 1 in the afternoon, so I don't want to hear any excuses about that.
Look at you.
Well, come on. You got rush hour in L.A. at noon?
Listen, Grant, this is for all intents and purposes, this is a playoff game. You would think that, like, because if you lose this game, your 162 games, Grant, they meant nothing. It's over. It's done. It's a wrap. I was surprised. When they panned up, I looked in the upper deck, and there was a whole section. I mean a whole section where there was no one there. Wow.
Both sections, up top, everywhere. So, and again, we talk about the Cubs and the Brewers. That was an exciting game. I don't know how much of that game you watched, but, boy, the Brewers at Wrigley in that atmosphere, very, very, very impressive. So, anyway, if you want to talk some baseball, we've got wild card National League game tomorrow. It looks right now, barring a comeback, that the Rockies will be in Chicago to face John Lester and the Cubs. So you got to give the Cubs big advantage there with John Lester on the hill. And then, you know, you move to the Yankees and the A's on Wednesday. And no word from the managers on who's going to get the ball first. I think it's going to be Jay Happ from the Yankees. And, you know, Bob Melvin may just go with, you know, pitching by rotation, and the committee is, hey, you're pitching this inning,
yep,
and I'm going to pitch you until you're not pitching. Like, you get your first guy in trouble, I'm bringing this guy in, then I'm bringing that guy in, and I think it's going to be a really long game.
I wouldn't be surprised if Bob Melvin doesn't go about it like that, because so many guys, and so it's such a rotation that they've had guys that have stepped up that you just go, wow, man, that's big time. So I think that he is going to depend on that a lot, Grant, and see, you're right. As soon as someone gets in trouble, he's going to bring someone else in and give them opportunity. Because it has been, for using the Golden State Warriors term, it's been strength in numbers for the A's, and they've done one hell of a job this year.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Heck of a football game tonight, Doug, in the west of the AFC with Kansas City at Denver. That is going to be a fun game.
It is. Mr. Patrick Mahomes trying to keep a Kansas City team just absolutely rolling. When you talk about offense, Grant, it doesn't get any better than what you see in Kansas City. There are some teams out there that are doing some things, and then when you talk about the Broncos, this is a team coming off of a loss last week to the Ravens, and that is no accident. You look at that Ravens team, and they look to be doing some really good stuff if you watch that game last night. So this should be a nice little AFC showdown tonight, and we will be tuned in, my friend.
Yes, we will. All right, if you want to talk about the Raiders and what you saw yesterday, again, I just thought the calls against the Browns robbed them of that game. But give the Raiders credit. I mean, they were down. They came back. You know, Derek Carr did what he had to do. I thought that the reversal on the sack fumble was maybe the worst call I've seen all year.
Grant, I need someone to explain the rule to me,
yeah,
because
the rule is the officials missed it. That's
the rule. Yeah, that has to be, because look, it sacked, the ball is out, scoops the ball, and he is taking it to the house, and that's pretty much going to end that game. And boy, oh boy, the Raiders get a gift, and the Browns, when you look at the Browns, Grant, they really could have really truly only one loss on the ledger right now if you look at the way that they've been playing. They've been playing some good football, man.
All right. Remember that all guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. A lot of people getting on Frank Reich, the head coach of the Colts, for going for it on 4th and 4. I thought it was great.
I do, too.
I don't know why anyone would criticize him. You didn't have a lot of time left. You're probably not getting the ball back. You got to win the game. You know, if you got to make 4 yards to win the game, I'm sorry. I'm telling my team, hey, you know what? I got confidence in you. Go out and make 4 yards. I don't know why he's getting ripped. I don't have any problem with him going forward at all.
Listen, if you're the coach, you know who you hired. He was offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Absolutely.
And they were as aggressive as you want to be under Doug Peterson. So did you expect something less?
Here's the other deal. If you punt the ball there, you're probably not getting it back. There's not enough time left, and game ends in a tie. You don't want to play for a tie.
Your quarterback, Andrew Luck, went in and owned it. He said, you know what? If I would have thrown a little bit better of a ball, it was the right play for the moment. He threw it a little bit too in and a little bit too down. He needed that to be a little to the right and a little bit up. That's a reception, and the game, it continues on. So I would agree with you, Grant.
Yeah, I don't know why he's getting criticized. I mean, you know, if I'm the owner, the first thing I'm doing is I'm making a call, or the general manager, before he even gets to the podium in the post-game press conference, that I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I applaud you, man. That's what I love. That's what I want. Go for it in those situations.
And Andrew Luck said it as much. I mean, he spoke for the locker room. He said, I don't know about you guys, but the fact that our coach has that type of confidence in us to let us go out there and do that, I like that. And for that, let you know what type of locker room that is right now. And Frank Reich has them trending in the right direction.
You know, I'll tell you a team that no one's talking about, and very quietly they are getting the job done, and that's the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, Grant. I mean, listen, Mariota goes down. He comes back. You know, he's had the nerve problem in his fingers or whatever. He comes back because the quarterback who filled in for him gets injured and leads them to a W. Then comes back this week and says, you know, I really don't have any problems. He has that little glove that he's working with. But this is a team, hey, Grant, that, man, come on.
They take the personality of their coach, Mike Vrabel. I love what they're doing. They are a team that right now is clearly, you know, a team you got to reckon with. I mean, look at the wins they've had already. I've been very impressed with what I see there.
Yeah, when you look at this Titans team, now they beat the Jaguars, Grant.
That's exactly right.
9-6 in a field goal contest. That's
down in Jacksonville.
Yeah, that says something about their defense.
Yes.
Because Blake Bortles the week before had went off, and then now you go into the Eagles and beat them.
Yeah, at home. So here's the deal. You just beat the Jaguars and Eagles on back-to-back games.
How about that? You got an AFC contender in the AFC Championship, and then you got the Super Bowl champs. And you beat both of them, and to beat the Jaguars in a fist fight, pretty much, that is really impressive. And then also they beat the Texans 20-17, and lost to the Dolphins. The Dolphins are playing good now, losing another offensive lineman for Dolphins. That could turn bad fast down there. You got to be careful.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Remember that coming up on the show today, Russell Baxter, NFL writer for the NFL Spin Zone at 3:45. John Feinstein to talk about the Ryder Cup at 4:30. John Feinstein, a very noted author of many books, many golf books, and Ray Fossey, A's color analyst. That's coming up at 6 o'clock. The A's are in New York. They flew to New York after their game in Anaheim yesterday. From what I understand, day off today. They'll be at the stadium for practice tomorrow, and then the game will be Wednesday. We'll air that game for you right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. It's the winner of that game will start in Boston on Friday. So the A's have packed for a week of being on the East Coast, and if they beat the Yankees on Wednesday, they will leave the stadium, go to the airport, and make the quick flight up to Boston, and get ready to take on the Red Sox on Friday. I know one entity that is sitting in their offices and praying that the Yankees beat the A's, and that's the network. All right,
yes,
because
right,
you know, the A's Red Sox compared to the Yankees Red Sox. You know how many millions of dollars that's worth to the network?
Oh boy, Grant, yeah. I mean. Just all the Boston Sucks gear that is going to be sold. But listen, A's are playing with house money right now, Grant.
Yes, they are.
They should be loose. They should go out there and play baseball like sandlot ball. Just have a good time. Enjoy yourself. And listen, one swing away, you said it the other day, whoever's winning after five innings is probably going to win the game, especially when you got closers in a bullpen like the A's have.
All right. We'll come right back. We'll open up the phone lines at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. This is Sports 1140 KHTK. All right, something I want to talk about, and I do not want to exclude a lot of players Division III college football that are from Sacramento, because it's great to see players in our area go on to succeed in many areas. But I'm going to talk about two individuals because I think it's really neat, and I'm going to start with a guy that just became Washington's all-time leading passer, Jake Browning,
who was
a star at Folsom High School, and they clobbered BYU. And when you think about some of the quarterbacks that have played there, like Warren Moon.
Yeah, you know that guy. Yeah, he throws really – he's a really good thrower.
So Jake Browning is now the all-time
– Congratulations.
Lead. How about
that? Big time, Grant.
And then – On Saturday afternoon, you saw Ian Book.
Book it.
And I will tell you, I watched him play his first ever game at age 8 He was on my son's football team, or I should say my son was on his football team. And I've watched him play as a kid all the way through high school. And it is really neat for me to remember him at that age and watch his work. I told you he worked out at the same gym as I did, mm-hmm. Minnie's House of Pain. I used to see him there all the time, both during the school year and then in the summer. Mm-hmm. He comes from a great family. He is just an amazing kid. And how about his performance against Stanford on Saturday in his first start Notre Dame?
Listen, without him, they don't win. How about that?
Yeah.
His ability to run the football, to pull it down out of the pocket, create some plays, create some the scramble. And they were on about the 10-yard line. The scramble with the throw in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Rolling
going one
to his
way.
Left.
I just went, man.
Well, even Doug Flutie was talking about how he really, from a technical perspective, made a great play, opening up the hip so he can make the throw.
He can make the throw.
Right, and I was just, it's so awesome. He played lacrosse, too, in high school. So I used to see him all the time at my son's lacrosse games and then, football. He's a kid that you want to root for. And then the fact that he's from our area, and there are so many others. I mean, for moms, dads, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, I'm not excluding your loved ones. I can't talk about everybody, but these two and what they did and the fact that Jake Browning is now the all-time leading passer at Washington, that's pretty impressive.
Oddly enough, Grant, if they keep playing the way that they're playing, they could meet up in the college football play-in or playoff.
How cool would that be?
That would be something big time. But kudos to both of them, man. Played great games this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's big-time college football, man.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, did you see those gold helmets? Just going, oh, man, he is running the Notre Dame offense, and right now they have stepped up. Coach Kelly has them playing a style. They look way more athletic than they have ever looked because that's been one of the things that have held them back against the top teams. They couldn't match up athletically.
I can't remember his name, but how about the defensive captain? What was he wearing, number 25 or whatever? I mean, for Notre Dame? Okay. I mean, he was all over the field.
Got to give him love, man. And, listen, it's a long season. They both of them, they still got some work to do. And when you look at Jake Browning in Washington, Grant, they have the chance to do some really big things. After that first loss that they took early on in the season, they're going to have to run the table. But they have the possibility to do it.
And I aired. I said it was his first start. It was his first home start.
Home start.
He had started against Wake Forest on the road. And they
think he was nervous?
Yeah.
I would think so.
But that was, his first home start and played great. Yeah. Really did. So it's going to be fun to watch how these guys and others from our area go through the college ranks. Hey, if you want to call the show, 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. After Wednesday, we'll know who the four teams are left in each American League and National League fighting for the right to move on to get one step closer to the World Series. For Sacramento tonight, a chance to, see what they can do against Phoenix. Let's get to some phone calls to start us off, and we begin with Chad. Hello, Chad. Chad, what's going on today? Chad, you there? If Chad is there, we cannot hear him, Chris, so just letting you know. Chad, let's try it again. Hey there. All right, let's get to Jerry then. Jerry, you're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you, Jerry?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Very good. One of the talks of Ryder Cup from this past weekend, the record was 9-3 or whatever, 9-2, or now it's 10-13. That's not a coincidence. I think that I want to thank the American team for making up for the losses I took on that Raider game, first of all. I don't know what's up with the American. I just think, how we have the physical specimens on our teams, the Tiger Woods, the Brooks, Koepka, the Dustin Johnson, they're always talking about how physically good that these guys are. I think that the Europeans are just mentally way tougher than us. Mentally way tougher than us. Another thing is, I think that the European Tour is not given enough credit, and the American Tour is given too much credit. I think they deserve higher
rankings
than they're getting over there.
I will say this. I don't know about the mental toughness, because Brooks Koepka showed some mental toughness winning the U.S. Open 2 years in a row. And I will say that Brooks Koepka came from the European Tour, so that's where he kind of bagged his bones over there, and then he came over here and he's done some great things. I will agree with you. I don't know that the American Tour necessarily gets more credit. It's more publicized over here, but that European Tour is really good as well.
You know, Doug, I was thinking one way to even it up would be to have the Asian Tour join the American Tour, just like Europe joined England and Ireland a number of years ago.
Not going
to
happen. Thanks, Jerry. Yeah, not going to happen. Daniel, you're on with Grant and Doug. Hello, Daniel. Daniel, what's going on?
I'm driving back from Spanish Bay right now, so what a tough course to play that is.
Oh, boy. It's Target Golf, that's for sure.
Yeah. Talking about the Raiders a little bit, I would agree with you. I think the call on the fumble that they overturned, or they didn't even overturn, but they ruled the forward progress was stopped, was a bad call. And then also the how they overturned the spot of the ball.
Terrible.
On the
both
last
were terrible.
Drive.
Horrible.
I'm a Raider fan, and I don't know how to feel. I mean, I feel like we should have beat the Broncos and also the Dolphins, but you know, I guess you take the wins where you can get them.
I guess so. Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. Take the wins where you can get them, especially against a quarterback making his first start in Baker Mayfield. And, you know, Baker, once again, you know, I mean, here's another young quarterback that if you try to project where he's going to be 3 years from now, it looks like the Browns have their franchise quarterback.
Yeah, it does.
I would agree. And one thing about Derek Carr, you know, he's thrown 7 interceptions this year. The one thing I do like about Derek is that he seems to not be fazed. He doesn't seem scared to throw the ball in there still. I might be a little scared in the pocket, but it doesn't seem to be scared to make the throws.
Yeah, and I don't really count interceptions. I count because there are interceptions that are a lot of times aren't the quarterback's fault. Now, some are, but there are interceptions that aren't the quarterback's fault. I've always said this. I would love the NFL to have a system like baseball does for pitchers, earn runs and unearned runs. I'd like to see a category in the NFL where interceptions are shown and then, you know, interceptions that aren't the quarterback or Hail Marys. Like,
yeah.
You know, a quarterback throws a Hail Mary and it's intercepted. That's
time.
Not really an interception.
Good
I mean,
point.
You know, that shouldn't count against the quarterback. A ball that is right in the receiver's hands that goes off a receiver's hands that is picked off, that shouldn't count against the quarterback. So, you know, I think we get too carried away when we talk about touchdown to interception ratio with quarterbacks in the NFL. That can be somewhat misleading.
I would agree. And last thing, I'm glad you brought up Jake Browning. I'm going to head up to Washington to watch Stanford play them in about 4 weeks. So Bryce Love versus Jake Browning should be a fun matchup to watch.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Good for you. Hey,
yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, we are going to talk some NFL football. Our guest will be Russell Baxter from the NFL Spin Zone. That's next. All hands come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Russell Baxter, NFL writer for NFL Spin Zone. You can follow him on Twitter at Bax, B-A-X, football guru. Russell, Grant Napier, and Doug Christie, how are you?
Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Doing good. Let's. We've got one quarter of the season almost in the books, and we'll conclude tonight. Let's talk about the rookie quarterbacks. Who stood out? Who hasn't? Give me your thoughts on what we've seen from these number one draft picks. Of course, let's start with what we saw in Oakland yesterday from Baker Mayfield.
Well, that kind of aggressive style, which I think serves him well, but at the same time turned over the ball 4 times. Still, you see the Cleveland Browns put 42 points on the board is almost astonishing,
right.
Considering some of their offenses in recent years. Lo and behold, unfortunately, they gave up 45. And to be fair, one of those 45 was a pick 6 at the expense of Baker Mayfield. So, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I think it took 4 days. But
right.
This is obviously a team headed in the right direction. Now, what they need to do is follow that up. They get the Baltimore Ravens coming to town. We saw their defense, especially in the second half against Pittsburgh last night, come back and win some. They haven't won a divisional game. I think it's been 3 years.
Wow.
And, you know, so they have all these streaks of, you know, they've now lost 23 straight road games. But as far as Baker Mayfield, I mean, you have to like what you see. There's an air of confidence that goes with him, and it's been infectious among the team.
What's your take on what you saw out of Josh Rosen? Puts the Arizona Cardinals in position to get a field goal and win the ball game. They miss. Seattle comes down, does the same thing, and gets out with the win. But in his first performance, your thoughts?
I thought he hung in there pretty good. This is a team that's really devoid of offensive weapons. I mean, think about it. Think about all the scoring we're seeing in the league this year, okay? And the Cardinals have scored 37 points in four games. Okay, wow. that's like a half for the Rams. So they played probably their best game of the year yesterday. And I think he hung in there pretty well. David Johnson had a fumble. They moved the ball. Again, slow but steady. Certainly fared a lot better than that relief job the week before. He wasn't in there long, but, you know, gee, thanks. Thanks for putting me in there against Khalil Mack.
Right.
And so on. So, but, you know, I think he handled it pretty well yesterday, and there's no reason to think he won't be the starter the rest of the year.
I guess in a nutshell, and again, you're right, Rome wasn't built in a day, and we're only judging this based on a couple of games, and in Baker Mayfield's case, really one game and two quarters. Four guys that we're talking about, Allen, Rosen, Mayfield, Darnold, they all look like they've got pretty good futures, don't they?
Yeah, Allen, I mean, that strong arm is will make up for a lot of stuff. The learning curve for him is a little tougher because he's playing behind one of the worst offensive lines in the league. I mean, and it's funny, the one game that they won, you know, in which he, you know, leaped tall buildings in a single bound against the Minnesota Vikings, it was actually Kirk Cousins who got the kind of treatment that he's gotten, okay? No pass protection. We forget Buffalo lost three starters on their offensive line this offseason, Eric Wood, the center, Richie Incognito, and they traded Cordy Glenn, the left tackle, to Cincinnati. So, with the exception of that game against Minnesota, where they got some short field position and so on, it's going to be a very, very long year unless they can get LeSean McCoy on track, unless he can get like a little support. But again, there's a team Josh Allen doesn't have a ton of help surrounding him, especially up front. And, you know, that's really unnerving for a rookie quarterback.
Russell, Grant and I were talking earlier about the Tennessee Titans. They beat the Jaguars in a fist fight, 9-6, who made it to the AFC Championship game last year. And then this week they beat the Super Bowl Eagles. Mm-hmm. Underrated, under the radar, how do you look at this Titans team?
Well, I love the addition of Mike Vrabel as head coach, and because it reminds me of when the Buccaneers brought on Tony Dungy. And I mean that in this sense. Mike Vrabel was a college defensive end, turned outside linebacker, turned part-time tight end by the New England Patriots, and a pretty good one, 12 for 12 in terms of red zone opportunities. So he understands both sides of the football. You knew Tennessee was going to be a physical team. The only thing that slowed them down so far was a couple of weather delays. That 7-hour marathon they wound up having to play in Miami. They won three 3-point games in a row, two within the division, and now showing grittiness. Vrabel aggressive on fourth down. The Eagles couldn't get them off the field in fourth down in overtime. Mike Vrabel knows something about winning Super Bowls by 3 points as well.
Speaking of points, and you just talked about how many points Cleveland scored yesterday. The last time the Giants scored 30 points, I think they were still building Rome. How is it that they've gone so long without being able to score 30? That's one of the biggest, most craziest oddities that I've seen in the NFL, which is a high-scoring league. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, again, offensive line. They went out and drafted Nate Solder. They drafted Will Hernandez in the second round. You know, we've seen Saquon Barkley get 100 yards from scrimmage four games in a row, but boy, does he have to fight for them. Yeah. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of help up front. You know,
Solder looks horrible.
Yeah, he's been a major disappointment for them. And maybe that's why New England didn't want to give him all that money. But even if he was playing well, you're still building a new left side. And remember, a couple of weeks ago, they lost their starting center for the year as well. So I think most people, or a lot of people at least, continue to underestimate what the offensive line does for a football team. You know, we're all you know, most of us are kind of wrapped up in star power and quarterbacks, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'll make the case last year the Eagles don't win the Super Bowl without their depth on the offensive and defensive lines.
Frank, you just mentioned the Eagles, and their offensive coordinator from last year is now the head coach of the Colts, Frank Reich, and he's taken a bunch of criticism for that fourth down play. Grant and I were discussing it. Your take on it, but even more than that, do you think that that's something we're going to see a bit more of in the NFL, is coaches going for it?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of, talk about overtime and the ties. And, you know, we saw two ties, and we damn near saw two more ties yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Philly, Tennessee, Indy, Houston. I think what this gets somewhat overlooked, and to me it's a big deal. They reduced overtime from 15 minutes to 10. That's huge.
Yes, it is.
That really changes everything you do in terms of overtime. Teams don't want – and listen, I think Frank Reich probably got caught up a little – in not wanting to play to a tie like Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Minnesota and Green Bay. I just kind of questioned decision because of the field position more than anything else. He didn't have enough, even if they would have converted, they still needed a bunch of yards to get in Adam Vinatieri's field goal range. By doing what they did, they made it very easy for Houston. And I think he's, you know, I know Andrew Luck came out and supported him and so on, and, you know, it is what it is, but no pun intended, I think Frank Reich might be kicking himself a little.
So basically what you're saying is you're either winning the game on that play in all likelihood, or you're losing the game on that one play. Because here's the deal. Right. If they punt the ball there, they're not getting the ball back. There's not enough time left. So the best-case scenario, if you punt the ball, barring a turnover from Houston, the best-case scenario is a tie. And as a coach, I mean, do you want that scenario? See, I don't have a problem with him going forward. I know the field position was on his half of the field, but you got two choices. You either punt the ball, you're going to do the best you can do is a tie, or you keep the drive going and you try to win. What's the problem with that? I don't get that.
Well, I don't mind the aggressiveness, but, you know, it's a divisional game and it's at home. And it's not the kind of game you want. You're better off. Listen, Pittsburgh tied Cleveland, okay? It's not something that Mike Tomlin's going to put on his resume, okay?
Right.
But it's still not a divisional loss, okay?
And I see.
Those are the things that come back. And, you know, when you get in this league where teams miss out on the playoffs because of tiebreakers, I think you had to kind of take that into account, okay? And now all of a sudden they're sitting 1-3. They have a short week, and they're at New England on Thursday night. And listen, well, I'm not sure what to make of New England yet after four games.
Right.
But still, I thought it was because of the field position and where they were and the fact that they had so much more. You know, I guess let me ask you this. If you go for it on fourth down, why don't you really go for it instead of just trying to get the first down? Why don't you move and get that ball down the field, which you gave Adam Vinatieri a much more realistic chance at a field goal?
Well, you had over 2 minutes left. I don't think you need to go more than a first down there. You got plenty of time left to then, on a new series of downs, move the ball down. But you make a great point, Russell, and I had overlooked this. You're right. The last thing you want is a divisional loss. So your point is well taken. But there is plenty of time left on the clock if they get a first down there, even if you go, if you make 4.5 yards. All right, you got a first down at the 50 with 2 minutes left. You got plenty of time to go down and kick a field goal.
Listen, if he didn't make it, and he's criticized. If he made it, he's a genius. We all know how it works.
Right, but you make a good point.
We all know how it works.
Right,
this is true, Russell.
But you make a great point.
I don't, and I'm not knocking him for his aggressiveness. I guess in my long coaching career, I might have just played it a little different because the one thing with Houston. But let's not forget, Houston squandered a big lead in that game. So maybe you do make a play. Maybe you do force a fumble. Maybe, you know, listen, there's a lot of different ways to slice it. I understand exactly what he's going for. What I really applaud is Andrew Luck not even hesitating and coming out and backing his head coach.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's his head coach for only four games.
Good point.
Russell, great stuff, man. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Overtime tonight? I mean, let me know. And
you know, maybe a tie, Russell. Maybe a tie.
All right.
Listen, the only people who have more ties that are enjoying this is Men's Warehouse.
Good point.
All right. That's good stuff right there. Russell Baxter. We'll be back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK.